Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. It's a party on today's show. I'll be joined by, oh, look, it's eight-time All-Star Vince Carter. It's NBA champ Kendrick Perkins. Tim Hardaway Sr. is going to stop by, guys, coming up. Also, Jason Tatum is going to join us to talk about his max extension and how the Celtics are handling this short offseason. First, though, the Rockets and the league are reviewing whether James Harden violated the NBA's COVID-19 policy after online video surfaced of him partying maskless at a club. The Rockets and league office are attempting to verify that it is indeed recent video, which would confirm that he violated protocols and would also jeopardize his status for tonight's season opener against the Thunder. Now, in response, Harden posted this to his Instagram story. One thing after another, he writes, I went to show love to my homegirl at her event, not a strip club, because she is becoming a boss and putting her people in positions of success, and now it's a problem. Every day, it's something different. No matter how many times people try to drag my name under, James writes, he says, the real always ends on top. Of course, I would personally note that the issue the NBA is investigating isn't whether he was at a strip club specifically. It's being at an indoor gathering with a crowd of people without a mask, all of which is against NBA rules. And on top of all of that, we have breaking news on The Jump. Here to give us the latest on the Rockets, our senior NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski. Woj, I want to get to Harden in a second, but you have a developing story here. Some of the other Houston Rockets who may not be available for tonight's season opener against the Thunder, what is going on?
Yeah, Rachel, the Rockets are conducting contact tracing on a few of their players, including a couple of their key players, beginning with John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, and KJ Martin, their rookie forward, I was told tested positive, but they're testing him further for the coronavirus. What I was told was they were off away from the facility in the last day or two, getting a haircut, and they were at an apartment of one of the players, and so it was Cousins and Wall and KJ Martin among them. There might have been another player there. But right now, because of that positive test for Martin, and the team itself announced just prior to us reporting that he had tested positive, that he was not with the team. He was self-isolating, like Ben McLemore, who we also reported tested positive a few days ago for the coronavirus. So also should note, our sourcing tells us that both Wall and Cousins have both tested negative today for the coronavirus. And so, you know, that contact tracing, based on what else they find out with KJ Martin in terms of whether that positive test stands up, you know, that could keep other teammates out of the lineup. The league essentially has some freedom with contact tracing with how long they would hold a player out. We saw with Mike Connolly in Utah, based on proximity and to somebody who had it, you know, they kept him away for almost a week.
Wow. Well, as if that's not enough to deal with, let's get back to James Harden, the allegations of him partying at a club. What would happen if the Rockets and the league conclude their investigation and find that Harden is indeed, as it certainly appears, and really by his own admission in that Instagram post, that he was in violation of the league's COVID protocol?
Yeah, he could face a suspension, Rachel. And, you know, these protocols are all new to the season, and we haven't seen them. The league have to punish anyone yet, or to execute at least outside of the bubble. We saw what happened with Daniel House with the Rockets last year inside the bubble, but this is different. And, you know, this has been a recurring theme with James Harden leading into training camp, being in Atlanta, being in Las Vegas. And so, you know, now he's self-isolated and tested negative, I believe, six consecutive days before he was allowed and cleared into training camp, but based on what their findings are, and I know the Rockets are working with the league on Harden, you know, to see essentially if he's going to have to be away from the team again, and again if there's going to be a punishment. So, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty. And by the way, the Rockets open up tonight against Oklahoma City, and I'm told the Thunder have not really had any contact with anybody with the league or the Rockets about what this means for them and their game tonight.
It really is remarkable to see the dominoes. And Woj, you and our colleague Tim McMahon have done such great reporting on this all morning. I've been glued to both of your Twitter feeds. One of the things that came out was confirming, in fact, that sources told ESPN that James Harden indeed had coronavirus earlier this year. It is what made him late for the bubble. Of course, that was the assumption, but it had not been publicly confirmed. And it is my understanding, is it yours, that the league is telling players, even if they've had it, we don't know enough about how immunity from this disease works, that you can't just assume because you've had it, you can run around without a mask or publicly gather, correct?
That's exactly right, Rachel. The rules don't change for you if you have previously tested positive and now just have the antibodies, or you've yet to have the coronavirus. The rules in place are the same. And so they wouldn't be different for James Harden or any other player or individual in the league who's, you know, who's going to be tested and be around his peers.
Really, just every day I wake up and something new is happening in Houston. I know it's 10 times for you guys. Thank you so much for your insight, Woj.
Thanks, Rach.
We will be here all show. So if anything else more breaks, you know where to find us.
Okay, sounds good.
I want to welcome back in Vince Carter, Kendrick Perkins. Guys, I want to start with you, Vince. What is your reaction to hearing the latest news on James Harden?
Well, when I first heard about it, I was like, again? I was like, is this the same, the
right.
original one? So, I mean, I know he doesn't want to be there, and, you know, he's doing everything he can to get moved, but Perk has said this for a long time now, is Houston Rockets have the keys, and they could do with him what they want. And another thing that he said, that they don't have to move him to the team that he wants to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So with all of the back and forth and not showing up and going here and going there, they can send you wherever they want to send you and just deal with the consequences. Or, you know, if he doesn't show up to practices, the games and they play, they're going to continue playing with or without him. So he has to realize, I think if he wants to get moved, he just needs to just do what he needs to do. And I don't want to use the word model citizen, but just come to work, be the James Harden we all know, and increase his value so he can, so they'll move and cooperate with him. But right now, I don't see Houston cooperating with him, particularly if they don't get anything of value that it comes close to what he brings to the table.
Yeah, and Vince, Rachel, look, Vince is letting them off the hook pretty easy. This is bad. This is not good for several reasons. And one of those reasons is that, one, if you're trying to get moved, like Vince said, then you have to be a professional, because not only do the Rockets mm-hmm. have the keys and they don't have to trade you, but it's a turnoff to other organizations, because I've been hearing from multiple GMs that they're scared of trading for James Harden, and it's not, and it has nothing to do with his on court, what he does on the court, is what he does off the court, and they're scared that if they trade him, that he's going to be a bad example in the locker room because of things like this. And here's another thing that makes me so mad about this, and I love James as a person,
mm-hmm.
but he is burning down the bridge for the younger generation. You know, it's guys like Barkley, Magic, you know, Michael Jordan, all these guys who paved the way for guys like James Harden to be making hundreds of millions of dollars. And right now, the way that James is acting, he's acting selfish because for the simple fact, they have a younger generation that's coming up. And what's going to happen is the owners are going to go to the CBA when it's time to negotiate. And they're going to say, you know what? We got to discuss things like this. And you don't want to do that. You want to keep making it easier for the next generation of kids to be able to get paid hundreds of millions of dollars. So right now, I don't approve of anything that James is doing. And I saw his Instagram post. We're not trying to drag his name through the mud. He's creating these problems himself. We just have to address it.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, I want to stress, the NBA in general, there's no morality thing here about its players going to strip clubs, because Gosh, guys, that's been happening for quite a long time. It's right now in coronavirus. It's the same issue with, exactly, you've heard that. You've heard that once or twice, Vince. It's the same issue with Lou Williams. There was no morality judgment about, oh, man, he was in a strip club. You cannot be in a place with lots of people right now. You just can't. It puts your teammates in jeopardy. It puts the rest of the league in jeopardy. It goes back to the selfishness that you're talking about. And that's often also really the issue here with the fact that he tested positive before. He's already been through all of this. I understand that for players who have tested positive, and I've heard this from other players around the league saying, well, I have antibodies now. Why do I have to be so limited in my personal life? Shouldn't that just apply to the people who haven't had it yet? It doesn't work like that. You have to think of the whole, not just of yourself. And that is what the NBA may be telling him in terms of a fine or a suspension later today. Yep.
And Rachel, I think these guys in general have to understand is that how disappointed will they be or would they be if all of a sudden Adam Silver and the NBA come out and say they have to cancel the rest of the season because of, you know, this situation or so many guys have had. And now that everybody's in an uproar and you're going to start pointing fingers. And they did an unbelievable job in the bubble of not one issue with this. So now you're going to need everybody to buy in and be and show some discipline. And like you say, it's just not about just you, because it's the bigger picture. Because if they shut the NBA down again, everybody's going to be in an uproar.
Yeah.
You know, so they got to think about that as well.
All right, guys, coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about the action on the basketball court last night. Nets, Warriors. Which teams should we be thinking about more with the result of this game? Welcome back to The Jump. You know, scientists say it takes just 7 seconds after we meet someone that we start making judgments about them. I don't know if anyone has specifically done one of those studies for NBA fans, but from what I saw last night, that number might be even lower. Just a few bounces of the ball and suddenly the internet had decided. The Nets, apparently the best team ever assembled. The Warriors are supposedly in horrible, unrecoverable from trouble. The Clippers are on a mission this season, and the Lakers apparently just have a championship hangover. Of course, none of these first impressions will likely turn out to be entirely true. The Clippers, as you may remember, also beat the Lakers pretty soundly in the opening game of last season, and well, we know how that all eventually panned out. But there are still some things we can take away from last night. Starting with the Nets, who did indeed look like they will be a tone setter at the top of the Eastern Conference. Kevin Durant had 10 points in less than 5 minutes last night, including that beauty. Whew, yeah. He would finish with 22, while Kyrie Irving looked as wizard-like as ever, moves like this. My lord. The Nets also shot off their depth. 6 guys scored at least 8 points, including 20 for Karis LeVert. And thanks to the NBA's new expanded roster rules, the team even set a record by having all 15 of their active players see the floor. Afterward, the Nets celebrated with Kyrie presenting rookie coach Steve Nash the game ball.
This is the start of something new right here, man. And I'm grateful to have you as the head of our snake bar coach. And I go to war with you any day, Steve.
I'm telling you.
Aw, very nice. Also post-game, we got a KD interview with TNT's Inside the NBA crew. That did not go as well, especially when Charles Barkley took a turn. Take a look.
You know, Kevin, there was talk about you coming back for the playoffs last year, so you really just been working on your game, trying to get back your timing and conditioning, really, to be honest, correct?
Yeah.
Come on, man. What you do to me?
I don't do anything. You know you've been passed up, but we don't know you said that.
I've never seen anybody give you just a one-word answer, man. What's up?
Now, to be fair, Chuck only asked Kevin a yes or no question, and KD answered it. But the fact that he didn't elaborate further became, well, a topic of conversation in the studio for the rest of the night.
That's my question, Chuck. Anything, just ask me anything.
What time is it, Shaq? I mean, Shaq, you think y'all go away?
Hey, Shaq, how was the shopping spree for the kids?
Pretty good.
Because if you're not there.
Hey, Shaq, ask me a question.
Charles, how many gifts did you buy for Kenny this year?
None.
End of the highlights
Kenny,
we go.
Kenny.
Yes.
Kenny, how your kids doing?
Good. Okay.
Yeah, even Draymond Green chimed in. That is a lot of laughing, crying, faces there. Now, Green did not chime in on all the talk about how the Warriors had just been schooled, although Steve Kerr did, joking it was some sort of basketball karma for all the times the KD Warriors had done that to other teams in recent years. Still, I would caution anyone from making one of those seven-second rushes to judgment on Golden State. No, the Warriors are clearly not an elite team right now. Without Klay, we knew that already. They are also likely not as bad as what we saw last night, which was rookie James Wiseman's first game and a game Draymond didn't even play. The same caution about first impressions also applies to the Clippers and Lakers, who kicked off the night with the most unusual ring ceremony in NBA history and finished it with some disjointed play and LeBron James sitting out the game's final 8 minutes with a rolled ankle. Now, I was in the mostly empty Staples Center last night, and I can tell you the whole vibe was just, well, as weird and disorienting as everything else has been this year, which is why when, not long after the game started, Paul George bounced a pass to, the referee? It wasn't shocking to me that he was taking a minute to get his bearings. Of course, NBA Twitter is NBA Twitter, so we got a lot of this. Again, though, first impressions aren't always correct, and PG's night was about to get better, a lot better. A dominant 33 points better, where we saw PG do stuff like this. Yeah. So that's good to see again. And this. The performance certainly seemed to back up what Paul has been saying for weeks, that finally having two healthy shoulders was making a world of difference from last season. It also underscored how the franchise listened to him when he publicly complained about not being put in enough pick and rolls. Last night, nearly 70% of PG's possessions were pick plays, and the Clippers also gave him more flexibility within each of those possessions, which directly led to 34 points overall. So how much stock should we put in all of what we saw last night? Not too much. After all, scientists have also found snap judgments, the ones we make in those early 7 seconds, are often just patently untrue. Apparently, we have to give these teams at least, 2 games? Then I'm sure we'll know everything. Vince, I love those Paul George stats. I love seeing him thrive and answer the challenge last night. Mm-hmm. What do you think the Clippers can do to continue getting that version of Paul George?
Nothing. I think it's, in my opinion, I think it's business as usual. We've seen Paul George have great regular season. They need him to be prolific, elite, one of the best 5 to 10 players in the NBA in the postseason. So right now, this is just revving up, getting warm for the postseason. So I think, put him in the pick and roll situations that he wants, where he feels like he can thrive. Okay, fine, we're gonna put you there, but we need you to bring this same energy and effort in the postseason for them to win.
Yeah, I agree. And here it is, Paul George is a phenomenal player. No one could take that from him. He's an elite two-way player, one of the elite two-way players in the game today. I think the biggest challenge for Paul George is his mental. And the best thing that happened for Paul George was Ty Lue. Ty Lue is a coach that not only he would get on you, but he could relate to you. So he's almost like a friend slash brother slash coach that would get the best out of Paul George, and he listens to his players. You could tell Paul George is playing with a clutter-free mind and his shoulder on the court. And like Vince said, we never doubted his talent in the regular season. It's when it gets tough and when it matters the most in the postseason, what Paul George are we going to see? Are we going to see the Paul George that have those 5 for 15 nights? Or he's going to be locked in? He's going to block out all the distractions. He might need to take a chapter out of LeBron James' book and go dark mode where he get off of social media and just have straight tunnel vision. And I think that will help him a lot.
Yeah, that's a great point, Perk. I want to get to the other game from last night.
And I want to add to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to add one thing to that. And I think, and he should use the regular season as practice, as these big games, the Christmas games and any big games that they have. That should be his approach, playoff mode. Everything is to playoff mode. They felt like they had a letdown and this didn't happen. Everything should be geared towards and predicated to how we're going to play in the playoffs starting now.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's get to the other game from last night where the Nets looked awesome in that 26-point win over the Warriors. The 7-11 duo of Kyrie and KD. Kyrie, 26 points in 25 minutes. KD, 22 points in 25 minutes. Perk, was that blowout last night More about the Nets being great or the Warriors having trouble?
It was more about the Nets being great. It's not, look, the Warriors are not the only team that's going to get blown out by the Brooklyn Nets. It's going to be a lot of teams get blown out by them, Rachel. They are deep. Kyrie and KD are on a mission right now. Look, Kyrie could burn all the sage that he wants. He could sit Indian style. I don't care what he do off the court. When he get between those lines and he play this type of basketball, the Nets are going to be tough to beat. And I love what Steve Nash is doing right now by bringing Caris LeVert off the bench, because he could possibly win Sixth Man of the Year because he's a bucket.
Yes.
But look, the most important thing I was impressed about, the ball movement. Guys were not playing my turn basketball. They were letting it go. They were flowing through the offense and not forcing anything. And by the way, on the defensive end, their energy was there, and it was set by Kevin Durant, blocking shots and taking charges. The Brooklyn Nets are really, really scary to anyone, but they're coming out of the East, I tell you that much.
Ooh, all right, Vince, what about you?
And to say it, I tell you, it could go either way, depends on what side of the spectrum you're on, but I definitely think it's about the Brooklyn Nets and what they have to offer. And just think about this, the last 2 years, they made the playoffs, and they did not have Kevin Durant, and they did not have Kyrie Irving.
Right.
So now you're adding prolific superstars to this team, and all you need now is adjustment to getting these guys to buy in. I agree with bringing Caris LeVert off the bench as another scorer. So when you bring one of those guys, KD, Kyrie, out, and you bring Caris, and you still have two scores, or you can put him in there and feature him by himself. So they have so many options. Defensively, they're very good. And you see, like I said, Kevin Durant has bought in and in position. And there was one situation where he missed a tag, a bump, and he ended up getting a foul. Mm-hmm. And he said, and he admitted his wrong to the bench and to the coach. And I think that's the start, first of all, of a good defensive team. And players like that admitting their wrongs now can translate to good things later on down the line.
See, that's fascinating to me. I didn't catch that moment, Vince. I love hearing that, though, because one of the concerns about this Nets team, right, has been that defensively they're not as strong. They're not set up to be as strong as they are offensively. And can they bring that level up? Now, we saw with the Lakers last year, if you took the numbers of all the players the season previous, they didn't look like they would be a good defensive team, but guess what? Well, they buckled down and played great defense. And you think the Nets can do the same, Vince?
Well, Rachel, I'm going to say this. Even if they're not great individual defensive players, team defense is most important. What are your strengths that they have on their defense? They're shot blockers. So you just need to be solid, not get beat on the first dribble, and funnel everything down to your big guys, to your shot blockers. You have two elite shot blockers behind you, so you just need to be solid. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be locked down. You have to be a two-way player, but you just need to be solid and come up with a scheme that works for you, and you're going to make adjustments because you're going to play against special players. I understand that. But if you have a solid defensive system, good things can happen because offensively, like Perk said, they're going to blow out a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to blow out a lot of people. They're going to outscore a lot of people. But when those close games come about, you just have to remain solid. Yes, some schemes are not going to work, but if you know that you have two shot blockers behind you, that should be comforting.
Hmm.
And one thing that we have to keep in mind is that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are NBA champions, so they know what it takes. Mm-hmm. And when I watch from the start of the game, Kyrie Irving took on the challenge of guarding Steph Curry. He guarded Steph Curry. He picked him up, and I said, you know what? This team is locked in. And that comes from being taught in Cleveland for Kyrie Irving. You look at Kevin Durant. I saw that he was locked in. I taught him well. And then also learning from Golden State. What people don't give Kevin Durant enough credit for is that he is a leader. Mm-hmm. He's a leader. So Steve Nash could hold Kevin Durant accountable, and Kevin Durant could accept it. Everyone else now could be held accountable by Steve Nash. And you could tell they was tied on one string defensively, and it was very impressive to watch.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating to see this develop. The Nets, of course, one of our Christmas Day teams. We've got our annual Christmas Day tradition here on ESPN and ABC. Five amazing matchups available on the family of networks and the app. One of the games you'll see, Nets Celtics, I spoke to Celtics All-Star Jason Tatum just a little bit ago. Take a listen. We are thrilled to welcome an NBA All-Star. That's so much fun to say. Jason Tatum, thank you for joining us, Jay, as the season gets started. Do you feel it? Do you feel like it's a new season?
Yeah, I feel like it. Obviously, it's a quick turnaround. Things are obviously a lot different, but I miss hooping. So, a lot of other people, I'm just ready to be back.
Well, I was going to say it was a short off season. People barely had time to catch their breath, but you had time to do something very important. You signed a 5-year, $195 million extension with the Celtics. Obviously, that's a great referendum on what you have done so far in your career, but it's also an investment in you for the future. What type of pressure are you putting on yourself by signing this deal?
I look for it as a partnership. Obviously this is where I want to be for a very, very long time. And I was glad that we were able to make that happen. And, what I do on the court, and be able to, inspire people and compete for championships, it's more important than, I guess the money and things like that. If you go out there and, compete and accomplish all those things, the money will come. And I'm super grateful for it. Obviously, it's life-changing, myself, Deuce and his kids. I'm more focused on basketball and just the love of the game in that aspect.
Well, I'm sure Celtics fans appreciate hearing you say that, but I still got to ask, did you make any big purchases? I mean, something you had to have given yourself for that deal.
No, I haven't got anything. I don't spend any of my NBA money. I save it all and invest it. So I only spend my endorsement money. So, I'm still stacking that up.
That is a good strategy. I did want to ask you about your team because you've had guys in and out, right? Gordon Hayward's not there anymore. Kemba Walker not going to be able to start the season because he's taking care of that knee. How does that change things for you guys as you try to get off to a hot start here?
Yeah, I think it kind of has to elevate everyone else's game. Starting myself, JB and Smart. We got to pick up the slack. And the new guys, we got T and Tristan. Veteran guys that have been doing this for a while. And even the rookies, everybody has to be ready to step up. These uncertain times. And, when we got some guys out, especially in the start of the season, we don't want to fall behind. We want to get off to a great start like everyone else. So we're just going to need more from everyone.
Well, I don't mean to invite you on here and then hit you with an investigative gotcha question, but Jason, I'm just going to go there. I am. Did you really grow 2 inches? Because Brad Stevens came out and told everyone that you went from 6'8 to 6'10. And we want to know the truth here at The Jump. We can handle the truth.
Nah, he said that last year. I think just after a game, something that I might have looked 6'10", but I'm growing my hair up. So hopefully that helped with my height.
I don't know. I like the back and forth you have with Donovan Mitchell over it. I guess what you're kind of always growing, and you're always a teenager still in the NBA.
Always.
Do you have any butterflies for opening night, Jason? Do you still get those?
Butterflies, yeah, I get excited. It's kind of like first day of school. I remember my first game in the NBA. I was a lot more nervous, but the excitement is still there. And I think that's where the butterflies come in, and I love playing this game. And, thankful that we get another opportunity to do so.
I love it. Jason, thank you so much. Best of luck to you guys this season. We'll be talking to you plenty. Always fun to have those guys drop by. Coming up, we're going to have our award prediction segment. Find out who Vince Carter and Kendrick Perkins are picking for MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, and so much more. Stick with us. Welcome back to The Jump. We had such a great opening night, but for most of the league, it's tonight that marks the start of the NBA regular season. So this is our last chance, guys, to make some 2021 award predictions. First up, I want to know who you guys got for most valuable player. Caesars William Hill has Luka Doncic as the front runner, just ahead of reigning two-time MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo. So, Vince, who's your pick?
I mean, that's a great list. You look at that list, but I'm going to say Durant's going to come back with a vengeance to prove that he's one of the best in this league. And you know, I think we forget how prolific of a scorer he is. I mean, he showed, you know, we're like, oh, is he back? Let me tell you something. What he was doing and how easy he scored over whoever. It didn't matter if you were 7 feet or 6'5", he was scoring at will, and we're going to see that all year.
Well, I don't have a problem with your pick, Vince, but Kevin Durant, you had your turn. LeBron James, you had your turn. Steph, Giannis, y'all had your turn. James Harden, move out the way. It is Anthony Davis' turn, and I got him picked to win the MVP this season.
Well, look, Anthony Davis also a big candidate for Defensive Player of the Year. In fact, he is the front runner, according to Caesars William Hill. He's followed by Gobert, Giannis, Bam Adebayo. So, Perk, are you picking him for both? Are you picking him for Defensive Player of the Year and MVP?
Well, no, Rachel. I thought Anthony Davis should have won it last year, so I'm going with Bam Adebayo. Yes, I said Adebayo. I don't ever pronounce his name right. You get what I'm saying? He is a guy that could guard 1-5. He's a great rim protector. I love the way he anchors that Miami Heat defense. And I'm expecting big things out of Bam defensively this year for the Miami Heat.
And I'm going to go with Anthony Davis on this. And I agree with Perk. I think he was supposed to win last year. He feels like he was supposed to win. His team feels like he was supposed to win. And they have a great chance to go back-to-back with the title. So I think with him now slowly getting the keys to being the go-to guy, I think he's going to be the anchor to their team and make a huge difference. And I think he wants to prove that he was supposed to win it last year to go with that championship.
All right, let's hit Rookie of the Year next, guys. Caesars William Hill gives LaMelo Ball the best odds of winning that award, followed by Anthony Edwards, James Wiseman, and Obi Toppin. So, Vince, you won Rookie of the Year in 99. Who is your pick to win Rookie of the Year 22 years later?
I mean, in my heart, I want to say Anthony Edwards, you know, because I don't think Minnesota has enough firepower to make the playoffs. So with that being said, it turns to LaMelo Ball. And so it's a slash. I say Anthony Edwards, but I think LaMelo has a better chance to get his team into the playoffs.
Right.
If you would, in the
East. That's part of it, though.
So, I mean, you know, that's gonna speak volumes, obviously, for that award. So it turns to LaMelo.
Yeah.
Well, I love LaMelo. I think he's exciting, but he's not going to win the Rookie of the Year. I got to go with James Wiseman. Watching this kid last night, he scores so easy. He can score. He finishes well around the basket. He got a nice touch around, a nice 15-footer, nice post moves. And then this offense that the Golden State Warriors have around, so much attention is around Steph. He's going to get buckets, especially when Draymond Green gets back. So I got James Wiseman. You know I got a soft spot for the big man.
You do, Perk.
And
look,
yeah,
I don't really give predictions, guys, because it takes some of my joy. One of my joy of watching the NBA is that I don't know how it's going to go. But I do have to agree with you, Vince. I think Kevin Durant is being overlooked in these preseason MVP picks and odds and everything like that. He's Kevin Durant, and the Nets are set up to be pretty amazing. I just think he's going to be
There was no hesitation today.
None.
There was no hesitation on the court.
All right, coming up, NBA legend Tim Hardaway Sr. dropping by to talk about, you know, his son Tim Hardaway Jr.'s Dallas Mavericks team, his old Mavericks team, tipping off their season tonight against the Suns here on ESPN. Sr. also talking about a little 90s basketball with us. You know we got into that. Keep it locked on the jump. I am so thrilled to have five-time NBA All-Star Tim Hardaway dropping by to see us. Thank you so much, sir, for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Look, you are, above all, a parent, right? You have a son who is playing in the NBA, Tim Hardaway Jr., during a pandemic. So before I ask you about the league or about yourself or anything else, what is it like being an NBA father right now, knowing that these guys are going to be out there in the world?
I gotta be telling everybody, all my friends, my family, they'd be like, what, you know, how Tim dealing with this? How, you know, the other ball players dealing with it? I said, hey, the NBA has the best situation. They understand exactly what they need to do. And the only thing that the guys need to do is follow what the rules are. You know, don't deviate from the rules because you put your teammates, your organization, and other teams at risk. And my son, he's good with that. He's good with following rules and understanding how to be safe and what he needs to do to be safe.
Well, look, if I had you for a dad, I would follow the rules. I'm just saying, I have seen you out there, so I believe you about Tim Jr. What are your expectations for the Mavericks this season? What do you think you're going to see?
You know, if they stay healthy, sky's the limit. You know, Porzingis coming back in the middle of January. You know, Tim has to, he's been healthy. Than he ever has been. He's 100% healthy. He's playing like he's at 100%. His athleticism is back. His confidence level is back. His versatility is back. Luca is Luca.
I was going to say, you got to get to the most important name on that roster. No offense to your bloodline, Tim, but come on, it's Luka Doncic.
Hey, you know, I think everybody knows that it doesn't run without Luka now. Yep. You know, I'm biased and everything, I want my son to excel in everything and have a great season. But, you know, everything runs through Luka, and Luka is a MVP candidate, the favorite to win MVP, which he should be. He goes out there and throws up a triple-double each and every night. He plays the way he's supposed to play, gets his team involved. He gives them a chance to win. And another thing is, a lot of people don't understand. Continually talk about this. The guy, he knows how to play because he's been in this situation since he was 12, 13 years old. He's been playing against pros and pressure situations since he was 12 and 13 years old. So this doesn't faze him. Nothing rattles him. If you try to beat him up. He's that big guy, physical, 6'9", that he go down there and take a little beating and hit you with some stuff too and make plays. You know, last year, if they would have stayed healthy, they would have came in, I say, third, fourth, or maybe fifth in the Western Conference. So I'm looking at that same type of play this year if they stay healthy.
Well, Tim, I like you giving Luka his due because sometimes the old heads, let's not lie, sometimes they do not like the young kids in the league, especially the Europeans coming over. So thank you for judging Luka on the merits. I do want to get back.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
It is what it is, you know, and that's the truth, you know. I mean, some guys don't like to, you know, they like a sugarcoat. I'm going to tell you the truth. Luka is a guy to reckon with, and he should be an MVP candidate.
90s basketball got a huge resurgence when The Last Dance was on TV. Everyone wanted to know everything about all y'all's business. What was that like for you in the middle of a pandemic in one of the craziest years ever? Everyone wants to know all about what happened in 90s basketball all of a sudden.
It was great. It was some of the best basketball, I think, in the world, in the universe. Man, it was fierce competition out there each and every night. You had to bring it. And what made 90s basketball was the physicality of how you had to play and how you had to understand and really, really, really teach yourself and watch other teams, how they will play you and how you can play against them and how you can stop them. You just had to be a student of the game. You had to learn a lot of things about the game, and you had to work on your game. It was just intense basketball, and I wouldn't change it for the world. I loved the competition in the 90s against Jordan, against Reggie Miller, against the Knicks, against Kobe, you know, against my best friends, Mitch Richmond and Chris Mullins. I just enjoyed the 90s.
Absolutely. Tim, thank you so much for being here. I love talking about the old days with you and the new look, guys, too. We appreciate it. And I know you will be in front of your television on Christmas Day with your Mavericks gear on.
No question. With my Mavericks gear on, my Golden State Warriors gear on, and my Miami Heat gear on.
That's right. That's right. Christmas Day was basically built for Tim Hardaway. Thanks so much.
No question. Thank you.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk expectations for Russell Westbrook in his Wizards debut tonight. Next in our League Pass, Game of the Night, Vincent Perk will be back. Check it. So time for our League Pass game of the night. 13 games on the slate. First full night of NBA action for the season. Now, Bucks Celtics is on TNT and Mavs Suns it on ESPN. So those national games, not eligible. That leaves Wizards Sixers as our producer's pick for the League Pass game of the night. Doc's first game is head coach in Philly. Russell Westbrook's first game in D.C. Perk, what are your expectations for Russ tonight in game one as a Wizard?
I expect him to go out there and get the win. You know he going to come into the arena with the drip, and he's going to bring the drip on the court. He's going to put that key into Bradley Beal's back, and Bradley Beal's going to have one of those Paul George seasons like he did with Oklahoma City. The 76ers better strap their shoes up because the Wizards are on their way, Rachel.
Hey, I expect business as usual for Russ. I mean, his approach is one way and one way only. Go hard or go home. So I think, like you said, and I think it's going to be good, great for Bradley Beal. And it's going to give him an opportunity to play a lot of one-on-one basketball because of the attention that Russ draws. And it's going to be fun to watch.
Perk, what do you think of the Russell-Scotty Brooks repairing? Do you feel like this is significant that he's playing for his old coach?
I love it because guess what? One thing about Scott Brooks, he's a firecracker. He's not afraid of Russ. So the best thing happened for Russ, they got Scott Brooks and Robert Pat. Bertans going to be shooting in front of the parking lot, Rachel. I can't wait.
There we go. All right, guys, football is next. Matt Barry and Mike Golic Jr. in the